Welcome everyone to the Region 7 Planning and Policy Council meeting. I can't believe it's been a full year now that we've been meeting virtually. We started meeting virtually in April last year, and here we are, April 2021, but we've gotten through it. We've done it. Just a few things I would like to go over before we get the meeting started. Per Governor Lee's Executive Order 78, this meeting is being recorded and it will be posted to the department website within the next day or two. With that being said, when you're asking a question or presenting, if you don't mind, please state your name before doing so. It's helpful when capturing the minutes. And also make sure your phone or your computer is on mute if you're not speaking, so that we don't get any feedback. Bart, I'm going to go through the participants on the call, and then I'll hand it over to you all. So I'm going to start with the individuals who have joined via computer first, because I can see your name, and then I'll go to the call-in users. So like I said, my name is Kirby Fye. I'm with the department. I'm listed as Amy Holland on the participants list. We have Allison White, Amanda Myers, Albert Richardson. Hey, Albert. Bartholomew Allen. Ben, what is your last name, Ben?
Ben Dickey, D-I-C-K-E-Y.
Thank you. We have Butch Odom. We have Jakardis. Jakardis, what's your last name? I always ask you this.
It's Suggs. Jakardis Suggs, S-U-G-G-S.
Thank you. I'll remember it, I promise. Kevin Spratlin, Kurt Hipple, Lindsay Blevins, Marta Hernandez, Mary Neal, Monique Moore, Pretoria Griffin, Stanley Litford, Susan Bell, Tom Starling. Zakaya, what's your last name? Hello?
It's Taylor.
Did you say Taylor?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you very much. And then I see two call-in users. Can you please state your name?
Avis Easley.
Hey, Avis.
Heather Vestal with Team HCA.
Hi, Heather. Okay, it looks like we have everyone. I'll go ahead and hand it over to you all.
Great. Good morning, everyone. As I stated, it's good seeing you, even if it is virtually. It is good seeing everyone. We've already done the introductions. If you guys have had a chance, Butch sent out the minutes on during our minutes from our last meeting. We'll give you a quick review of it. If you guys can take a second to review everything, and then we will get a motion to approve those minutes. So let's take a couple of minutes to look at everything, and then I'm going to ask for a motion. All right. Hope that we're good. Can I get a motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting? And when you make your motion, do you mind stating your name and whoever seconds it, state your name as well?
Marta Hernandez.
We have a motion on the floor from Marta Hernandez to approve the minutes from the next meeting, from last meeting. I'm sorry. We have a second.
Mary Neal, I'll second.
Who was that? I'm sorry, I didn't. Mary Neal.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mary Neal is the second of the minutes. All in favor? Yeah. Anybody opposed?
Okay.
All right. We have the minutes approved from last meeting. So in the email, Butch has also sent out some documents that we'll go over a little bit later. Ben sent out not Ben, Butch. Hey Ben, I'm looking dead at you. I'm thinking about Butch. Butch sent out our needs assessment. He sent out the minutes. And then he sent out, what else was it, Butch? It was just that, right? The needs assessment and the minutes from this meeting, right? Oh, in the agenda. Sent out the agenda.
I then later sent out the agenda and the legislative paperwork that you had me send out originally. So okay. There ended up being about 6 attachments by the end. Then that email was sent out about 25 after the hour.
Okay. All right. So if you guys can kind of refresh everything, you can get those documents now. And those are some of the documents that we'll be going over throughout the course of the meeting. For the most part, I'm going to hand it over to Kirby to kind of go over the updates from the state. And then, Kirby, if I'm not mistaken, you'll be taking over the legislative proposal discussion as well? Is that right?
Yeah, I can. I'm sorry,
because I was asked to put it on there by Amy, so I thought that.
Yeah, no, just to remind everyone, it's part of my update, but I can also answer any questions anyone might have as well.
Okay. Well, then it's all yours, Kirby.
Okay. Oh, and by the way, Butch, I just sent you an email. You can forget about it. I found it. I just sent you an email, and right when I hit send, I found the document. So disregard. Okay. So just a few updates to go over since our last meeting. The February report for the 3-year plan, year 2, FY21, has been completed and shared with regional council leadership. If you're interested in viewing this document, please contact your regional council chair or vice chair. I also have a copy of it as well. So here's legislative proposal. The department would like to encourage the planning and policy regional councils to identify matters affecting people with mental illness, substance abuse issues, and or co-occurring disorders that may require legislative attention or action in the 2022 legislative session. Regional councils may use their 2021 needs assessments to help generate ideas for legislative proposals. I sent out an email. Ava sent out the one email while I was gone, and then I sent out another one with an updated form from the governor's office to please complete if you are going to submit any legislative proposals. So your regional chair and vice chair should have and secretary should have that information, but if you need it, I also have it as well. Legislative proposals are due close of business on May 17th this year. So basically, regional councils aren't required to participate, but they're highly encouraged to participate in the legislative proposal process. So I don't think Region 7 has a legislative committee, do they? It's not required. So some regional councils do and some don't.
I know we talked about it at one time. I don't think we officially, formally put one together. I think a lot of people said they wanted to be on it. I could be wrong. Mary, jump in or Butch. But I don't think we formally did one. We just threw the idea around. I think we want to. I think we should. And, in fact, by the end of this call, if we don't have one, we can put one together, guys, for anyone who wants
to. Yeah, I found that it's really helpful to have legislative subcommittees on the regional councils because there are members that are strongly interested in the legislative proposal process, and it's something that can be worked on all year round so that it's not so daunting towards the end. And usually, sometimes these forms, it's like a quick turnaround for when they're due. So if it's something that's being worked on all year round, it could make it easier. But yes, so if you have any questions as it pertains to the legislative proposal process, please don't hesitate to reach out to your chair, vice chair, or to me with the forms needed to complete this.
Kirby, if we choose to actually go about forming a committee, which I'm pretty sure we will unless someone objects, is there like a formal process where we have to submit names, or how does that work?
So if you can send me the name of a chair or vice chair, because the chairs of the subcommittees can then sit on the statewide legislative committee. So just send me the names of the chair and the vice chair if you create a committee, and we'll kind of just get that started. And we encourage obviously keeping minutes for those meetings as well as they take place, but they don't need, it's just like if you're adult and children subcommittees, they don't take place, I don't run them or anything like that, those meetings. They don't take place via WebEx through me anyway. We just encourage you all to take minutes of those meetings. And how often you meet is really up to you all.
Okay, sounds good. Can you give an idea of how the other regions are doing their legislative chair meetings and how often they meet?
So during COVID, they've been meeting virtually. And every council is different. So some will meet the same amount of times as the regional councils. They'll meet four times a year, you know, either before or after the council meeting. And some just plan to meet. They might like communicate via email or communicate in other means, and then they plan to meet during this time when they're due. So it's really just what works for you all.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
And I'm just asking for a friend. Who's the best region? I just want to make sure that whoever's kind of beating us with these committees and these meetings that I call them. And I find out what they're doing so that we can be number one. So
I will I will not say that there's any regions that are the best, but I will tell you that we get proposals from the same regions every year, and that is Region 2 and Region 4. Every year we get proposals from those two regions. Sometimes we also get proposals from other regions as well, but Regions 2 and 4, they meet regularly. And they have proposals submitted every year.
So what are the chairs of Region 2 and 4?
For the legislative committees or for the councils in general?
Both. For the council and the legislative committees.
The chair
the
chair of Region 2's council is Mary Nell Osborne.
Okay.
And the chair of their legislative committee is Ben Harrington.
Ah.
Yep. And then in Region 4, the chair is Robin Nobling over the council. And then the legislative committee chair is Elliot Pinsley. And I can send you their email addresses if you'd like after the meeting.
No, I have everyone's email address. And it makes sense that Ben and Elliot are over the legislative part. So, yeah, that's why.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if you're really interested in joining that committee, that's the place to do it and get your voice heard. So. Not everybody's interested in legislative proposals, but there are some that really are. So,
right. All right. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Bart, this is Avis. I just want to add to that what Kirby says. Hey, Bart.
Hey.
Also, look at it like this as well. You can another way you can approach this too is as you and the council members there, Region 7. As you begin to work on your needs assessment, this is a good time when you're working on your needs assessment because you already have that council or that separate needs assessment group already established or there, and they're talking, they're meeting, they're discussing. Also, pull in the legislative proposal at that time. If there is a need that's identified during that process that you may think about, do we need legislation for this, or, you know, is there a possibility? It's a lot of components to it, but I'm just saying a number of our regions, they discuss their needs assessment, sometimes also discuss legislation at that time because sometimes they can go hand in hand. So just keep that in mind. Whether you set up a committee or not, during that needs assessment process, it's a good idea to talk about that.
Sounds good. Thank you, Avis. In fact, I was just thinking we do have at least one needs assessment that we would need some type of legislative proposal, just thinking about some of the stuff that we did. So, yeah, we'll start doing that from now on. In fact, we'll make sure that we form a committee if everyone's okay with that. I think that would be wise of us to do.
Yeah, that would be great. And I will tell you, every needs assessment summary I prepare every year, there's usually quite a few that they could also be legislative proposals. So the needs identified anyway. So that's a pretty common thing.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. I just have a few more updates and then I'll hand it over. The department will receive an additional $15 million from SAMHSA through the Community Mental Health Services Block Grant and $30 million for the Substance Abuse Prevention and Treatment Block Grant to assist in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. States may use the supplemental COVID-19 relief funding to respond to needs and gaps due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. And Avis, I believe you said that more information would come about that in the future, correct?
Yes, that is correct. We did get approval from CAMHSA on the proposal that was submitted regarding both the crisis services set aside and also the COVID-19 supplemental relief funds. We did get that approved, but as mental health services work through all of the logistics with that, more information will be coming out later.
Thank you. And as Avis mentioned, there's also a 5% set aside. The department will receive an additional $687,000 to set aside 5% of the mental health block grant allocation to support evidence-based crisis systems. The 5% set aside will be used for evidence-based crisis care programs addressing the needs of individuals with serious mental illnesses and children with serious mental and emotional disturbances. Funds may be used to address some or all of a set of core crisis care elements, including centrally deployed 24/7 mobile crisis units, short-term residential crisis stabilization beds, evidence-based protocols for delivering services to individuals with suicide risk, and regional or statewide crisis call centers coordinating in real time. So you look for more information about that as well. The Tennessee's Emotional Support Line for Pandemic Stress is adding a new method for people to reach out for help. The free and confidential line now has the capability to offer assistance via text message. Tennessee healthcare workers, first responders, and all Tennesseans working in education, including educators and district and school administrators and staff, dealing with feelings of stress, anxiety, sadness, or depression related to work, can now call or text the Emotional Support Line at 888-642-7886 from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central and 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern daily. Specially trained mental health professionals who answer calls or respond to texts through the line can provide emotional support through active listening, help identify and address basic needs, and provide resources for managing stress and making a plan for self-care. And those are my updates. I'll send those to you, Butch, for your minutes.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Does anyone have any questions for Kirby? Kirby, it's good to have you back.
It's good to be back.
I'm glad. Okay, so today we're going. So we had Mr. Kevin. Kevin is a part of the mental health committee, and we worked on the mental health needs for the mental health section of the needs assessment. And I asked Mr. Kevin to kind of come back and talk a little bit more about one of the needs that we submitted and about the care team, so that we can all be on the same page and how the care team pretty much touches every aspect of everyone on this call and how they can actually be beneficial to us in response to the CIT model that's already exists. We kind of coined a medical CIT approach that we think can kind of catch on across the country. But what we found was that the care model was pretty, it wasn't as popular as it probably should be. And I thought that it would be very appropriate for everyone on the call to be on board with what Kevin does and how that model kind of helps curtail some of the crisis in our state. More specifically in Memphis and Shelby County, and how we can actually use this model going across the state of Tennessee and moving forward. So with that being said, Mr. Kevin, please come to the front and give your presentation on the care team model.
All right. Well, good morning, everyone. It's morning for a few more minutes at least. Many of you have heard me talk about the care team over the last 2.5 years that we've been operating. We began serving the community back in September 2018, and about a year ago, we went to 7 days a week, just 12 hours a day, 8 a.m. until 8 p.m. And just a quick overview of the care team. It is a three-member team, a multidisciplinary approach to behavioral health response in our community. We have a Memphis Fire community paramedic on there who's part of our healthcare navigator team, a master's level social worker who is with Alliance Healthcare Services embedded here at our fire station with us, and there is a CIT officer who rides with us or rides along with us each day. And so instead of us sending an ambulance on these behavioral health calls, we send our care team, and their goal is to do a holistic approach, a holistic assessment, forgive me, of those patients and find the most appropriate resource for their needs. Our goal is to avoid unnecessary ambulance transports to ERs where we know people are often not getting their needs met, and more importantly, let's avoid jailing and criminalizing behavioral health issues. The care team has done quite well, though it is underutilized, as Bartholomew and I were talking about. One reason for that is, just so everyone understands, when you call 911 in the city of Memphis, as is the case in most cities in the country, the call is answered by police dispatchers, and then if it's a fire or a medical call, it is sent to us here at Memphis Fire Department. And so those behavioral health calls that we receive through the care team come from a variety of sources. Primarily, they would come through the 911 system for people who would request an ambulance, and the care team would be sent on it. In addition, our field providers, the firefighter EMTs and firefighter paramedics working out in the community could request the care team. Our police officers can also request them, and our friends at Mobile Crisis can approach us and say, can you come respond on this same thing? So one way that we could better utilize that team is to make them the primary responder to behavioral health calls in our community instead of the police being the primary responder. As you all probably know, the police department here in Memphis should be very, very, very proud of the fact that over 30 years ago, they developed the CIT model, which is now spread throughout the country and in several locations around the world. And that CIT model was a wonderful step forward by police to say we need to do a better job of handling behavioral health patients. But what has happened in the subsequent decades is many times when there is a behavioral health emergency in our community, we send an armed police officer instead of sending medical and behavioral health specialists to assess those patients. And so what we're proposing with the care team is one thing, it should be 24/7. It should be operating around the clock to better manage these calls. And secondly, that it be supported in a way that would allow it to be sustainable. And that's a heavy lift because this is a need for providers, being paramedics and social workers. You still need that public safety piece there with a CIT officer, those specially trained officers who are hand selected for this type of work. So that's what we're proposing here, as well as some research into the model to see if it is truly as effective as we believe it is and as we've demonstrated over the last 2.5 years, and that it is suitable for scaling and expanding throughout the state. So that's the short to medium version of that story. I'll take any questions anybody has, or I can elaborate more on individual pieces if anybody's interested.
Hey, Kevin, this is just for my notes that I'm taking. Who are the three people that are on the care team again?
Sure. It's one of my paramedics here at the Healthcare Navigator Program. It is a master's level social worker from Alliance Healthcare Services and a CIT officer.
Okay, thank you.
One thing I want to throw out there to everyone is if we start trying to totally re-envision the way behavioral health crisis response occurs in our community, the care team would be a crucial piece of that. Here's what I mean. Many times behavioral health patients don't end up initially, at least, in the place that is most appropriate for their care. They may go to one facility or another, and they have this need or some other need that can't be met at that place. They end up being transferred. That's a delay in their access of care. It's an inefficiency of the system, and it costs money to the system. So I believe with our care team model, we're able to assess from both the medical perspective, the behavioral health perspective. As a reminder, my team also has physicians, nurse practitioners, and PAs on board in a separate model that can be used to help with the medical clearance piece and with making sure appropriate patients are sent to the right place. This is a way that we can serve as a gateway to directing, in a way, an air traffic controller, directing people to the most appropriate resource for their needs, improving efficiency, lowering costs, and most importantly, serving people in a more timely fashion instead of them just bouncing around to different places until they land in the right place. Now, that's a community effort. I'm not saying that we can solve that on our own, but I do think that working together understanding everybody's abilities to manage these types of patients and any limitations they may have as well, that we can direct people to the right place and better serve those in our community who need our assistance.
Hey, Kevin, this is Monique Moore. I have a quick question for you.
Yes.
I know you were saying when we run into clients a lot of times that have behavioral health crisis, and, of course, like you said, armed officers are being sent out. Is there a number that I can share with our clientele that we serve that runs into that problem? Like, is there a call 911? I'm new to this, so I'm not for sure what number they call.
So I'll explain that just a little bit and try to give you an answer. The best thing and the safest thing for all of us is that you go through the 911 system, because we ask all the questions that will allow us kind of to get a first look at what's going on scene before anyone arrives on that scene. So the 911 system is appropriate. That said, since the police department answers it first, it's very important that the assessor say, I need the care team to respond. This is what we're requesting. And so that way the call taker on the police side will not automatically default to what they've been doing for a long, long time, which is let me send an armed police officer by himself to go to the scene or with other officers. So request the care team. Again, the only limitation to that is I only have the one team running all of Memphis, and they're only running 8 a.m. until 8 p.m., though, as we've expressed, we're trying to get to 24/7 coverage. I can't give a simple answer. Y'all see that already.
Okay, thank you.
It's a complex issue we're all facing.
And I think, if I can, to put everything into perspective for everyone, I think this proposal is revolutionary, and it evolves how we care for the people who are experiencing these crises. It's not saying that anything is wrong with the model. There's just another process that we can take. And if we go about actually utilizing the care team as one of the first lines of defense, then this pretty much changes the perspective on how we treat individuals who are experiencing crisis. So the CIT still exists. It will always exist. As Kevin stated, we have something to be proud of here in Memphis, with it being it's the cradle and how it was formed. What this pretty much model, it just enhances already do, and it puts more of a human perspective on the individuals who are experiencing a crisis. Having a trained clinician that comes out along with an officer, and the officer hopefully won't be Kevin. Are they in uniform on your team now, or how are they dressed?
They are in patrol uniform. We have asked that they transition to maybe a polo shirt and khakis. That has been discussed. Though I'll remind you guys, they're getting a new director of the police department, so we'll have to go back and revisit that later. But that the point of me telling you guys that is we're trying to make sure everyone is safe on scene, but minimizing that law enforcement presence, because some people are uncomfortable with that. And so we believe that that's a good way of approaching it. And Bartholomew, I want to thank you for helping me refine that a little bit, because he's absolutely right. We're not replacing CIT. We just feel this is the natural extension of that and building upon that legacy and incorporating the medical and behavioral health piece into it even more. One thing I'll tell you guys is we have CIT officers who previously ridden along with the care team who will now call us when they're out on patrol and say, I really need an extra set of eyes here, more expertise. We welcome that. We encourage that. They like people to help them make those tough decisions. The other thing I'll remind you is, as you guys well know, many of our behavioral health patients also have coexisting medical issues, such as high blood pressure and diabetes and stuff, that need to be handled. And our paramedics and our physicians that are on part of our program can help address those issues so that we can avoid the ER whenever we can.
All right. And I also want to, and the reason why I'm talking so much about this is because I feel I'm almost embarrassed that I didn't know about this a couple of years ago, and we didn't utilize the care team like we probably could have. Having talked back and forth with Kevin a lot, I realized how huge this possibly could be, but also how appropriate it is for it to be in Memphis once again. If the original CIT model started here, mm-hmm. it would be only appropriate for us to have
a second
wave or the next component mm-hmm. of it to start here as well. I wanted to also speak on, if it's all right, Kevin, Ms. Moore asked about what number to call, and Kevin spoke accurately about us calling 911. Kevin, is it safe to assume that one of the hopes in the future is for the CIT medical model to maybe have a number that people can call in addition to 911?
We have discussed that. We've not gone down that path because it's answered by the same people. Our non-emergency numbers are answered by the same. We have considered that. I will add one thing. If you're used to calling mobile crisis, you can call them and request us because they have a team member embedded with us, they're able to contact us and get us available. My only fear in laying out a big number, guys, is, again, we only have the one team. And as you can imagine, when they go on a call, it's sometimes time-consuming, and they're not available for an hour or two sometimes. And so we've not marketed this too widely because we're worried about them being overwhelmed. And anecdotally, I will tell you, we talk about this all the time in the office, when you get one psychiatric call, as they're classified in our system, you often get a second and third one right on top of it. It never fails. It's amazing to us how they happen in clusters, particularly on Sundays, which is a big day for us. So a fear of widely publicizing too much and us not being able to meet the need very well, which, again, is one reason we're going to the state and saying we need to grow this model. There is more opportunity here to serve.
I was just going to mention, too, that with the rollout of 988, it might be wise. Yes. I know it's a little mysterious right now, but just to kind of keep that in mind, anything we can do to kind of mesh together and not let it become this big barrier or glitch and all the good plans that you're laying right now.
Tom, let me thank you for bringing that up. That is one of the talking points I've used with others, especially with our government representatives at the city and the county, even the state level. And later this week, we're going to speak with Congressman Cohen. I'm going to throw it out to him, too. 988 is a wonderful idea. I am very excited about it. However, I am concerned that as it is more widely adopted by the public, the need for response is going to be increased from where we're at. And what I'm after locally is let's be ready for that. This is, and y'all, I hope you know a heart of what I'm about to say here. This is a good problem. Like, we want these people to contact us. We want folks to know how to get help. But we've got to be prepared to respond to those calls. And I think we've got a good model that can be available to it. But just Friday, I was speaking with a representative of Shelby County government who was not aware at all of 988 being, at this point, 14 months away from taking effect. So thank you for bringing that up, Tom.
Tom, for those members that aren't quite familiar with 988, do you mind just elaborating a little bit so that everyone can be on the same page?
Yeah, it's one of those good things that hasn't happened yet, but next year in 2022, they'll be rolling out 988. So if you are suicidal or considering suicide, instead of having to remember a 855-TALK or was that 800 or 888 or what kind of toll-free number was that you could just pick up the phone and dial 988, just like you could dial 911 for an emergency or 211 for social services. 988 will put you in touch with a trained crisis representative so that they can be tended to in a quick fashion.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate it. And once again, like they've already echoed, I am on board with 988. It's probably long overdue, but I do know that there will be some issues that come along with 988 if we're not prepared. And I think this is one of the aspects that we're kind of trying to address now. So,
yes, I agree.
This is Susan Bell with Alliance. I just, number one, I want to thank Kevin. I mean, he is a true champion of this. No one can describe the campaign any better than he can. And Alliance is certainly behind seeing it expand, too. I do want to make sure that everybody, I just assumed everyone here does know the mobile crisis number, And, you know, in at risk of, you know, if there's any kind of fear of an medical emergency or a police emergency, you know, we want 911 used. But if anyone needs that number, I can provide it. It's answered. Monique is saying she did not. The mobile crisis number is 577-9400. And it's
in the chat, Susan.
I think I can. Yes, I see chat now. I can do that.
Yeah, put it in the chat. Yeah, that'll be great. Thank you, Susan. I appreciate that.
And y'all, Susan is not telling y'all the whole story. She was heavily involved in the launch of the care team and all the work that we did back in 2018.
Oh, I see. Modesty.
Modest.
No. I'm not as up to date on it as I'd like, but I'm so delighted to see this effort to expand it.
Green. Susan, I remember all the work you did, and I appreciate you.
Thank you.
So if does anybody have any more questions for Kevin? And once again, I know I'm beating a dead horse, y'all. I know I am. But you know how I am once I get a hold of a bone. This is probably the next wave in how we treat our members. And I've been in the trenches along with many of you for a lot of years now. And we've seen the holes that are in our system, not blaming anyone in particular. It is just simply the evolution of how we care for people. And as we get more versed and as research comes out, we understand that there are things that we need to tweak. This is pretty much the paradigm shift in how we treat people. Yes. And I want to make sure that if we can at least get on board with the idea of what we have in Memphis and utilize it. And this pretty much since I've been a part of Region 7, I don't know if we've ever just all just been on one page with one particular aspect. I know we've all worked to try to advance mental health in its totality, but if we can kind of get on board with pushing this agenda and helping it out, whether it's calling friends and letting them know about what we're doing here, whatever it may be, I really want to make sure that we understand how important this is to the mental health system across the country, across the world, ultimately, and how this is a big thing for us. So I'm through. I promise you I won't say anything else about CARES. I promise you. You won't get anything else from me. We have any other questions? Well, Kevin, I appreciate it. Thank you for your hard work, for everyone who worked on and discussed and shot down and rebuild and whatever else we did for these assessments. I appreciate you. I thank you. You guys are amazing, to the very, very least. So I'm happy. What we'll do at this time is, so as you know, we've been taking the past couple of weeks and we have been fighting and talking back and forth and texting and calling each other to get these assessments done. We finally got everything submitted. And that's due largely in part to you guys. It's because of those countless hours that you put into it. But we think that we have some really good needs that we submitted this year.
Like you don't really
Not like we haven't done in the past, but we just put a little extra care this year into it, and I appreciate you. At this time, I'm going to have Mary and Butch kind of go over the needs that we submitted, and we can provide for the chairs who were over those committees. Please provide any feedback, any updates that you want to give. The floor is yours, okay? So, Mary Butch, it's all yours.
Mary Butch, that's a partnership right there.
Sorry, that's that country for me. Mary and Butch, the floor is yours.
I will start with the adult and then let Mary do. So I will just, what I think I'll do, because there's a lot of wording to this, but I will read the need assessment as we submitted it. I know that okay, let's make sure everybody's muted. Let's see here. Let me see if I can mute people. Okay. But let me start with the needs assessment as submitted for adult mental health. What is the need? There is a demonstrable need for funding to continue and expand the care team model in Memphis, as well as to conduct research into its suitability for expansion throughout the state of Tennessee. I think the care team then goes on to explain the care team model and some data on why it's necessary, and Kevin just gave a great presentation on how that is, how that's needed. Let me just take a quick look at this. In terms of its desired outcome, the care team currently operates one vehicle for 12 hours a day, 7 days per week, and only responds within the city of Memphis. Since behavioral health calls for service occur throughout the day and night, is our goal to expand 24/7, 365, and to add a second response vehicle with its own three-person team. This would allow us to offer our innovative and effective solution to many more in our community. In addition, this model is scalable beyond Memphis and can be replicated throughout Shelby County as well as throughout Tennessee. So I think that that's our adult needs assessment thing. I know we've been already discussing this with Kevin. Is there any discussion or any questions that anybody might want to talk about now? Now, I've had the privilege of working on the needs assessment for Region 7 for several years, and I've also been a member of the CAB, or the Consumer Advisory Board, and working on theirs, on working on their needs assessment some. And there is this interesting theme, and I see a little bit of it in this, maybe a lot of it in this, in that what we have found in substance abuse is a very much peer-led kind of programming, or getting, you know, people with lived experience or people with similar histories, or to that matter, people with similar, with appropriate training that respond. And so I think what we're seeing in mental health are opportunities to mimic some of the supports that we see in substance abuse issues. So, you know, if a person is having an opioid problem and they end up in an emergency room, they're probably going to get talked to by somebody who's a navigator for opioid treatment. And so similarly, if somebody's having a behavioral health problem, we can send a group of people to that person who can help navigate them into behavioral health treatment earlier in their process. And so I think that's kind of a nice commonality that we see across there. Just trying to find the adult substance abuse.
And Butch, I think I have a theory as to why the substance abuse component often is sometimes more peer-led than the behavioral. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think sometimes the population that we deal with on the behavioral health side, and I hope I'm being respectful when I say this, I think sometimes they oftentimes have a difficulty in advocating for themselves. Maybe it's because of maybe there's more developmental issues that may be associated with behavioral health on that side. So you don't see as many peer-led conversations with a lot of our population. I'm not saying the entire population, but there are a lot of members here. I'm thinking now about my population here. Over the course of a year, we've served hundreds, if not thousands, of people that come in and out the door. And a lot of them cannot advocate for themselves. Either they don't have the ability to actually speak on what's actually going on with them. So it takes a lot of those conversations, a lot of background work from the case manager perspective. When it comes to substance abuse, what I found, and once again, correct me if I'm wrong, those individuals who are living with recovery, who are in recovery with substance abuse, they oftentimes know exactly what to say. They know what is going on with them. They know what to speak on. and they know what works and what doesn't work, and they have been advocates for that. They know how to speak well to that. And I think it's important, and I think this is what you were getting at, that we have a more peer-led or more peer-involved behavioral health aspect to our assessments or to what we do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Can I just, sorry, it's me, and I'm Albert Richardson. And, of course, we've been doing behavioral health services for years. So when you attempt to separate substance use disorders, co-occurring disorder, which are the same thing as a combination of both mental disorders and substance uses, we identify behavior health disorders that we've been identifying for over 20-something years. I'm kind of confused when you based on what I'm hearing the tips to separate the two. Can you give me some clarity on what you guys mean when you're saying or you're trying to identify behavioral health services separate from mental health and co-occurring or substance use disorder? Behavioral health, in our view, has been a combination of all of the above. Can you give me some clarity on it?
Yeah, are you talking to me?
Well, you or Butch, because, you know, you guys both are talking about it is a separate component, and I don't quite understand. So if I can get some clarity on it.
No, I understand, and I apologize for being, if I've confused anyone. So, for example, for Lowenstein House, we are strictly behavioral health here. And what I mean by that, individuals who are presenting or who have been diagnosed with a mental health disorder outside of substance abuse, anything that happens to do with any substance abuse, opioid, or drug, we aren't qualified to actually deal with that. We refer them out. We refer them to different programs like CAP. We refer them to Church Health Center, wherever it is, Alliance, that have those trained practitioners in that field, because that's just not what we do. So when I speak on it, I separate it, not because they are separate entities, but more speaking of to what we do as an agency and what some agencies do. For example, a lot of the programs don't do psychosocial here in Memphis. So when you start speaking of psychosocial, then you would kind of bring us into it. So no, they co-occurring disorders, substance abuse, mental health, they are in the same family. However, for this conversation, I list them separately because I've noticed how my members are able to advocate over the issues they have in advocating for themselves, as opposed to someone at another facility who just strictly does substance abuse, if that makes any sense, Mr. Richardson.
Yeah, I think we're actually maybe be saying the same thing. Because the one person, one individual that you identify that may have behavioral health issues, that have behavioral health issues, may have a mental health issues with which you are trying to address, along with other behavioral health issues, such as substance abuse or co-occurring disorders, and that you have to address those issues at the same time. You may specify one you treat within your facility and refer that same person to another services outside yourself, or provide that person with the additional wraparound services needed, get them on track, and implement a seamless transition of services to that individual, correct? Basically what you're saying. You're not really separating the diagnosis from the individual. The individual had all these issues. For example, the majority of the population that we now serve different from 25 years ago. The majority of the people that we serve now are co-occurring, meaning that they have both a substance use disorder as well as a mental health disorder, but the other wraparound needs that they need, for example, medical services, they need primary health, dental, case management, all those services are wraparound services that individual to make sure he gets a seamless transition of services. Some of those may be provided in-house, some may be referred out, but that person can get a holistic approach to make that person whole. And so basically, that's what represent behavior health to us, as I know it. So, and that was my question. So I think maybe it's a terminology that you guys are trying to use, starting to use, but it is the holistic approach. You address every need of that individual, mental health, physical health, and all those things in between. So maybe we're saying the same thing.
Yeah, Alan, I think we are.
Yeah.
Hey, Lawrence, can you mute yourself? You know, I think what I may have confused things myself, but I think one of the things, and certainly one of the things that I love about your organization is taking the lead on the MAT in this community really helps us to offer treatment options to people closer to when they're actually needing the treatment. I know that I've called and people on my team have called Chris and have gotten people in the same day to see somebody to think about starting them on MAT as opposed to getting on a waiting list for, you know, medically supervised detox and stuff. I think the point that some of the folks that I've been talking to, particularly on the CAB, have been talking about is how do we support people whose primary diagnosis might be a mental health disorder. You know, they've gone to the crisis stabilization unit and they can't get into another facility at this point. And so is there a place where they can go where someone with severe bipolar disorder can be with somebody else that has bipolar disorder and can and have some sort of respite in between, say, the acute crisis and when they can get into the next level of care? And so that's kind of where I was talking. But I do agree that I think for many people that struggle with substance abuse, if you really dig down deep into it, there's a behavioral health issue, and you can talk about chicken or an egg there. But yeah, I think this move towards holistic care for people with mental health and substance abuse disorders is really just a wonderful direction that we're heading in.
And yeah, and just to piggyback on what he said. And what you said, Mr. Richardson, I think it is a matter of semantics. I oftentimes interchangeably use behavioral health and mental health. Those two are interchangeable sometimes in our field. And when I use behavioral health, I mean mental health. But I also understand that in this totality, that behavioral health does encompass substance abuse and everything that deals with co-occurring. So, yeah, I think that confusion is probably more on me than anything because of how I interchange the words. But, yeah, you're 100% right, Mr. Richardson, 1,000% right. So, yeah, sorry about that.
Okay. Well, I think let me go on and if unless there's objections, let me go on and read the adult substance abuse and I think Kirby helped a little bit with the writing of this after it went up to her. So if
it actually is Lincoln. No, Lincoln's not on the call. He took over. I reached out to him afterwards. He's not on the call. So there, it is reworded a little bit, and there's different data there. More data, I should say. Once all of these are completed, once I have like a draft summary up, I'll also send those to you again just to review and approve, just to make sure I've captured everything accurately and that I didn't lose anything when I put it to the summary, because, you know, I only have so much space, so I need to narrow it down. So anyway, you'll get another copy of it in the very near future to review.
Yes. Okay. I think what they're talking about in the wording to be continued does have to do with some sort of a need for a safety net for people with addiction and mental health treatment. There again, you know, because of the lack of medical detox services, that there is a backlog of people needing care. And certainly As I mentioned earlier, some of the MAT solutions that are here in town now are just outstanding in terms of helping people get care closer to the point of when they're interested in making that change. But we can submit, we will send out to the group the final wording of the substance abuse, adult substance abuse language when it gets done. Okay, well, Mary, do you want to talk about our children's?
Yeah, and Lindsay or anyone from the child team, please feel free to jump in or add to as well. So from the mental health need for children, we talked about a community walk-in center for youth and families to get access to mental health services and receive an assessment without having to go to the ER or a psychiatric hospital. So in Tennessee, we have several of these for adult, but none for children and youth in Shelby County. The data we used was looking at the 2018 Tennessee U.S. Data book, which reports on 21% of Tennessee youth ages 2 to 17 have a behavioral health diagnosis from a doctor. And of these, only 60% receive services to address the diagnosis. 28% of youth report they feel sad or hopeless almost every day and meet criteria for depression. And 10% have attempted suicide in the past 12 months. So obviously there's a disconnect with children who have a mental health need and those who are able to access services. Many children in Shelby County are living in poverty and families are distrustful of systems, and there needs to be a community resource set up to connect families to resources. This location could be a place where families could come in requesting help, law enforcement could drop off as a jail diversion, and we could get youth connected. This is not currently addressed in the three-year plan, and our goal would be to expand access to low-cost, high-quality, outcomes-oriented community mental health and substance abuse services for youth. The desired outcome would be to collaborate on resources between community partners to allow for a more successful access point, and collaboration between crisis services, law enforcement, community mental health, juvenile court, and hospitals. What steps need to be taken? So there needs to be a point person agency leading the way to make this happen. Several years ago, Shelby County government did set up a work group to discuss or plan the launch of this idea, but funding fell through and some players disagreed on outcomes and the project was discontinued. There are a lot of key players involved and it was close to reality before it stopped. So the regional court could support and participate in the planning process. How could the Tennessee Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services assist the region? So a champion is needed to lead this project and stress the importance of meeting the community where they are when it comes to accessing services so more can be connected and helped. Funding will be needed from somewhere, but it does not need to come from the department if local government can put it in their budget. The results could reduce money being spent elsewhere if some youth are diverted from the court system. So that's the mental health need. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Okay, so the youth substance abuse need that we submitted was establishing substance use prevention programs within Shelby County schools. The data we used was existing substance abuse prevention programming in the county is provided outside of schools and is largely inaccessible to students. Shelby County rates 300% higher in school expulsions than the rest of the state, many of which are due to alcohol and drug-related offenses. And due to these suspensions, Shelby County is seeing a rise in the student dropout rate, which could potentially lead youth to continue down the path of using drugs and alcohol. Again, we use the 2018 Tennessee U.S. data book, which reports 22% of high school students use vapor products, 16% rode with a driver who had been drinking alcohol, 17% had said that they had used alcohol in the last 30 days, and 8% have used illicit drugs. The need is not currently being addressed in the three-year plan, and the goal would be to expand access to low-cost, high-quality, outcomes-oriented community mental health and substance abuse services and to reduce drug and alcohol use in youth. What steps need to be taken in participating in opportunities to work with youth who are being suspended, expelled from school, who are no longer accessing services, and work in partnership with the Department of Education to mandate curriculum for students regarding substance abuse prevention, Would we need help with additional funding? Maybe, depending on funding from the Department of Education. And we would require schools to come up with their own curriculum to work with students. Anything anybody wants to add or comment on, or any questions on that one? Great job on those two guys.
Okay. Thank you, Mary and Butch. I appreciate it. Any questions, comments, concerns? Did we capture everything? All right. Before we get off the call, I do want to go back to the legislative committee thing. I know we talked about it. I want to actually form it formally while we're here. I think we have about 22 participants. And Butch and Kirby, just a, I think the participants jumped down from two or three. I'm not sure. So you might, or it went up. I'm not, I can't remember. So you might want to do a roll call again before we get off the call. But yeah, so I do want to formally form a legislative committee. Is anyone interested? First of all, let me see, is the committee, I mean, is the council okay with that? Do you guys want to form a legislative committee? Yeah. I'll make a I don't know, do we need a motion, a formal motion, Kirby?
No. Mm-mm.
No? Okay.
No.
So is anyone interested in actually chairing the committee? We need a chair and vice chair. Who would be willing to take on that task? All right, maybe not. Take your time. All right, we don't have to do it here then. I am interested.
And there might be individuals that aren't on the call that you know are interested in legislation and things like that. Yes. That you might want to reach out to.
Yeah, I definitely want to be on the committee. I don't want to chair, nor do I want to vice chair it. Just letting you know that now. But I definitely want to be on there. So yeah.
And feel free to email after.
Yeah.
And this is Kevin Sproul, and I'm interested as well, but I am still new to behavioral health. I don't think I'm appropriate for chairing, but we do a lot of work in the legislative space, so I'd like to be part of this.
All right.
Well, so that's the hardest part right there, is getting individuals on board to join the committee.
Yeah.
So if you know of anyone, you might think of a few individuals that express interest as far as legislation goes, I would reach out to them and, you know, kind of go from there.
Now I come from a military family. I got military all through my. So what my military family would do is they pull somebody like Tom to the side, and they grab them by the elbow, and they'll be like, "Tom, we need you to chair this," and they'll say it very aggressively but very lovingly. I'm not military, so I can't do that. I'm just putting some stuff out there. But yeah, feel free to email me, Tom, anybody else. That'll be great.
This is Avis.
Avis, I didn't know you were on the call, Avis.
So, hey, what I usually find that usually when you put together a group, just like Kirby said, you get the interested parties involved, and then, believe it or not, a leader will emerge. So
right.
if you could just pull a group together, and just get it started that way. That's the first step. Baby steps, as I say, are small successes. So if you can get the group together, then later we'll merge the leader and a co-chair as well.
Yep.
I appreciate that. So, Amy, would you like to chair it?
Well, you know, in my role as state government, I'm not able to do that. But I tell you, if I was not in this role and I was a member of the Region 7 Council, I would be more than happy to do that.
Well, I know, Avis. I know you would. All right. So if anyone would like to email, you can email me. Email Mary or Butch. Email any of us. If you change your mind or decide you want to step into the role, but we will officially form the legislative committee today. So, and everyone who wants to be a part of it, then you're a part of it. This is a clubhouse. This is a secret handshake. I'll show you guys a secret handshake and the password later on, all right?
I will just say, in seconding your arm twisting of Tom, that Tom does come with an interesting perspective of being a statewide leader who probably knows a lot about what they're thinking about in Nashville. And so he could be like a secret weapon for us. But
Butch, I'm good at what
I could just see Tom signing off immediately.
Butch,
he's probably going to the Middle Tennessee region too.
See, I know how to identify talent. And I'm not saying Tom is the guy, but Tom might be the guy. I'm just saying, I won't do any more. I promise
you. You know I'm on the committee. We'll talk. We'll talk off air about the others.
There you go. That's a step in the right direction. All right. Does anyone else have anything else to say about Tom? I mean, not Tom. Anyone else to say about the meeting? Kirby or Avis, you have anything you want to add?
Just to go over attendance again before I forget.
Yeah.
If there was anyone who joined the call after attendance was taken, can you please state your name?
I actually have a couple of questions. I have a Lawrence Wilson on our agenda.
Wilson. I was trying to unmute.
That's okay. And then Kurt, was that Kurt Hipple? Or
yeah.
Was that another?
That was
okay.
Kurt Hipple. Mm-hmm. And I think is Michael Ellis. I don't believe I said his name earlier.
Yeah, I did catch him when he came in. And then I saw call-in user 3, but that was Avis, and Avis was here at the beginning. So at some point, another call-in person. Is there a person who is on their telephone right now who was not on the call when Kirby first started getting names? Like, who is call-in user number 2?
I think it's both still Avis and Heather.
Okay. Maybe it's Heather that I...
Heather Vestal.
Okay. Great.
And did we capture Stanley?
Yeah.
I got Stanley on my list. I've got everybody whose names are in the participant list.
Okay. Sounds good.
Cool.
Can you
hear me? Well, beautiful people. Yeah.
You can hear me? Hello?
Yeah. Who is this?
This is Akia. I just wanted to say something before we all leave. Just piggybacking off of what you said, Bart, it's just good to see everybody. So I just wanted to say that again before we go. Or just see your names or hear your voices.
Oh,
I just wanted to share that. And like Bart said and Marta said, it would be really good when we can all get together again or get together in our organizations and with our peers in our meetings or even hug. So I just wanted to say that before we leave.
I appreciate it, Ms. Taylor. Thank you. Yeah, Tom.
Yeah, I just wanted to share that we've actually completed an online mental health directory. This is something that Butch helped us to kind of launch. It's very similar to the online Memphis Addiction Treatment site, but this is strictly for mental health. And if you have not seen that, we would love for you to see it because your organization is probably on there and we want to make sure that it adequately reflects what you do and who you see and insurances you take and addresses that you serve. And if you've not seen that, I'd love to send out that link so you can proofread that and update it accordingly.
Yeah, can you do you mind, Butch, sending out to the council members?
Yeah, what is the link right now? What is the website address?
Let me give that to you, and I'll also put a little tab on there. People can click and just update it themselves, which saves us time and gets it right the first time. So I'll send you that, Butch, and then you can send it out to everybody.
I'll do that, okay. And I'll get the minutes out as soon as we can get the once we get the finalized substance abuse adult, I'll send all that out with our finalized needs assessments probably in the next week. So,
any more updates from the different agencies? All right. Well,
I would say just because I feel like I need to fill empty space sometimes. I think well over 95% of Church Health employees are fully vaccinated against COVID, and we've started in-person meetings again. And I mean, we're still socially distanced and wearing masks, but it is nice. There's a real place for some of our virtual meetings, some of our large virtual meetings, but it's been nice here at Church Health to have meetings with people mask to mask. So I think I'm echoing Zakiya there that it's good to, it is really great to be back talking to people live again.
That's great. That's amazing. Well, I know Kevin was, Kevin had, and Kevin, you can feel free to jump in here. Kevin and his team were going around and they were vaccinating the homeless population.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that stopped, Kevin.
Oh, no.
Good. Jump in.
Our here at the Healthcare Navigator Program, we are vaccinating homebound persons throughout Shelby County. We're helping those who are experiencing homelessness, having different pop-up events at various locations. We've started working with the Latinx community. We had our first event this last Sunday. We have another one this coming up Sunday. And we've also been going to some facilities and helping with vaccinations in places where, for instance, Walgreens or CVS was under the federal contract to provide vaccines, but they've not done that. So we've done quite a few spots. It's a 7-day-a-week operation here in Chats.
Kevin, if anybody on the call, if their agency is interested in having you come by, are you guys able to do that?
Absolutely. Let's talk about it. So a couple of different ways. If you have just an individual who's homebound and needs a vaccine, the city website is covid19.memphispn.gov. And there's a form on there for homebound vaccinations. If you've got a facility, feel free to give me a call. I'll put my phone number and my email in the chat real quick. You guys can just holler at me, and we will make arrangements. But we would love to come and help you guys. We are passionate about getting shots in arms. We're ready to get back to normal business.
Great. Thank you so much. All right, I know you guys are tired of me talking, so once again, it's great seeing you. I appreciate you. You don't even know how much I appreciate each one of you. Our next meeting will be for Region 7, will be on July 27th at 11:30 to 1:30 via WebEx again, unfortunately, sigh. And then our next statewide planning and policy council meeting will be on Tuesday, June. Yeah, who was that? Was that you, Lawrence? Okay.
Sorry.
It's okay. And then our next statewide meeting will be on June 8th at 10 o'clock a.m. via WebEx as well. And you will be receiving that link. I'm assuming from Ms. Kirby, will you be sending the link out, or we'll be sending that link out?
Yeah, everything will be posted to the department website as well.
All right, sounds good. Well, if there's no other comments or questions, this meeting is adjourned. I appreciate you guys. Call me, email me if you need anything, all right?
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.